You're listening to Radically Pragmatic, a podcast from the Progressive Policy Institute. We talk with lawmakers, policy experts, and thought leaders about the issues driving the news nationally and internationally. The Progressive Policy Institute is a catalyst for policy innovation and political reform with offices in Washington, D.C. and Brussels. Its mission is to create radically pragmatic ideas for moving America beyond ideological and partisan deadlock. We encourage analytical conversations, not your typical partisan talking points.
Hello, I'm Jasmine Stoughton, director of the Mosaic Project, and welcome back to another episode of the Mosaic Moment on PPI's Radically Pragmatic podcast. For those of you who don't know, Mosaic is a project at the Progressive Policy Institute that aims to put more women at the forefront of policymaking by empowering our experts with the tools and connections needed to engage with the media and lawmakers on today's toughest policy challenges. So today I am thrilled to be joined by Sarah Nichols, Energy and Economic Development Program Director at the Land of Sky Regional Council. So we're going to be talking about Sarah's recent experience testifying before the United States Congress, and the hearing was entitled Connecting Every American, the Future of Rural Broadband Funding.
Hey, Jasmine. Thanks so much for having me today. It's an honor to be able to represent rural broadband ecosystem issues and hopefully positively shape the future of broadband funding.
Absolutely. And so before I dive into all of the questions, I wanted to just reiterate part of the mission of the Mosaic Project and highlight a really important piece of information. So Sarah was the only woman to testify at this hearing. And we see this time and time again. The fact of the matter is that the vast majority of the people who are invited to speak before Congress are men. And even more pernicious is the fact that they're typically the same handful of men who are repeatedly asked to testify. So it's one of the major goals of Mosaic to ensure that Congress is introducing new and diverse voices in the hopes that experts like Sarah are given a seat at the table. So with that crucial point out of the way, we'll first start by kind of getting a broad overview of the hearing. So my first question is, what was the hearing about and why were you on the committee's radar?
So the big elephant in the room is that there's a continuation of the ACP program, the Affordable Connectivity Program, which was a set amount of money by Congress that can run out relatively quickly and would leave 21 million people without access to internet when that happens. So that's something we really needed to talk about. Congress scheduled kind of a nebulous broadband funding, broadband ecosystem hearing and wrapped up a lot the fact that there are a lot of programs that broadband funding goes into and how much of a tangled mess it is and is there any waste that happens as a byproduct. So the main purpose of the hearing was technologies and speed requirements. Should there be a shift in how they look at funding and what those excellency standards are, and then should they continue the ACP program? And I will say that my feeling in there is that they like the ACP program. It's just very expensive to run. So what kind of solutions? Some of them ask that question to us is what do they think or what do we think a solution to that problem is if we were to continue it? And then there were other people on the panel who spoke more to ways that this maybe could be done more affordably for taxpayers. The second part of your question, how were we on the Congress's radar for this? I don't know that we were. They reached out to a council of government in Ohio, so the minority committee staffers, and when they heard, hey, we need someone to testify on broadband, they sent them our way. So that call went to our executive director, and it was clear pretty quickly that they had to work fast. So a noon call or a noon email turned into an afternoon call. I think it does say something that other council of government looked to us to do that. So being on the radar of other council of government of what kind of programs Land of Sky is leading is what helped open the door.
Yeah, absolutely. And you just alluded to the fact that like the pace was incredibly quick, that they pivoted and kind of punted it over to you all, and a meeting turned into an invitation. It kind of went on from there. So I mean, most people are not aware of what a congressional hearing entails. And I think it's important to kind of peel back the curtain on why and how these hearings happen. So that leads me to my next question. Like, can you talk about the timeline for this invitation and what that process was like leading up to the actual hearing?
It was so wild. I am a Mosaic alumni. I feel like there was some amount of awareness that it would be a lot of work in a short period of time. Living that, I cannot emphasize that enough. So Friday afternoon was an email. Friday late afternoon was a call that my supervisor and our executive director were on. And when I saw that email, I texted Jasmine, actually. It was my first, I recall that if this ever happened, you guys said you would help. And she's like, yes, what do you need? So I was like, well, no more once this call happens, what thereafter. There was rapid fire questions from the committee staff about the ACP program, my thoughts on it, should it continue, how's it impacting. Just a 30-minute call turned into a 45-minute call that turned into a can you be there Thursday.
Yeah.
I still at that point was thinking, oh, they're just checking a box of the people we've interviewed. Here's who could be there Thursday. One more email throughout the night. So I'm going to say, being a committee staffer under deadlines, these people work really hard and all the time too.
Absolutely.
We had some internal conversations at Land of Sky, starting with a text to our congressman's staff. What do you guys think of this? Is this okay? And also our national organization, we didn't want to get in the way of any policy advocacy work that they were doing. Mm-hmm. And everyone was like, yes, congratulations, this is great. So we were waiting for a final decision. Saturday morning, I get that email. The staff want to have another call. And now all the questions are about fiber and technology and infrastructure funding. And I'm thinking, what is this hearing about? I'd read the memo, but it was kind of in congressional legalese from my perspective. And so I was like, this is kind of a mess. What are we talking about? And the best advice I got at that point was like, this is your moment. Yeah. Everyone I talked to was like, you, this is you testifying. This is you saying what you think about these things. And we want to hear what you have to say. So it was a very empowering process to go through of it being what my years of experience working in this space, this moment of cultivating my feedback to that. Sunday, I had a lot of calls with partners. I made a list of who I wanted to talk to and get their thoughts and support from. NDIA, mm-hmm. Digital Inclusion Alliance. I've spoken at a couple of their conferences. I'm an affiliate member, and they have testified before Congress a couple of times on digital inclusion issues or more. So that was a great call. You know, we're getting to speak with people who have done this and get a candid, the room's going to be big. There's cameras in your face. The congressional members, you know, like things like that, that off the cuff, but supportive of we want to see you do well was huge. We have a lot of partners with West Engine, which is our broadband initiative that I reached out to the state broadband office. People started making other connections. So I had a call with Catherine DeWitt, who I'm a big fan of.
Yes, us too. Major friend of Mosaic.
And we have some great talent here regionally with our local government partners or FCC retirees that, mm-hmm. that are in the area. So all of them, I got half hour or so calls with and talked out some of my points that really helped me start to write. You know, they listened to what I was saying and they've regurgitated a lot of that back to me or said, you need to read this article or here's a data point. Sunday around dinner time, I started to chunk out a draft of my written testimony so that by midnight, I'd sent that out to a lot of those folks that throughout the day Monday were helping me edit, making me look good, making it read better, making my points stronger. Tuesday morning, you turn it in. Then you start working on your verbal thing. I chose to use my Tuesday afternoon to get a haircut, which I think is like a kind of a critical. It was the only moment I had that was outside of the hearing, but I'm like, I'm going to be on TV. I want a haircut and I want to feel good.
Totally.
You know, and empowered. Wednesday travel. And then the committee, the people who work for the congressman's offices are calling you because they've read your testimony and they want to prep you with what questions might get asked, or if they have kind of a bill on the table that they want reinforcement to, they want to see how you'll respond to what their person's things are. That is really critical because it gives you a moment to prepare for what might be coming your way the next day. The committee staff, the minority committee staff that put me on the panel, also did everything they could to get good information about questioning from their congressmen. So that gives you a good idea to get some things at top of mind so that you're not with a camera in your face going, I don't know the answer to that. And then Thursday morning, the hearing. Friday afternoon to Thursday, and then I'm flying home. It was all I did.
Yeah, so less than a week. Less than a week, and that includes a weekend in which you are scrambling to make arrangements, travel arrangements, lodging arrangements, taking care of things that you, responsibilities you have at home, I'm sure. And I think the first point I want to make is that while you are the expert witness, the one expert that they've chosen, that you're just one person, right? So you're pulling off a hearing like this, but it also takes so many other resources and so much support from your network. Whether it's, I know that some of the women we've worked with who have testified have really leaned on their organization or the organization that they work for, or maybe that are a member of, and they can lean on those groups too. But it's also great to hear that you're consulting other experts in the field, and people you've really built a relationship with. And then the second piece is relating to that, but yeah, the written testimony, like in addition to speaking before Congress and having that televised, you're also submitting a written piece of testimony where you can explain sometimes in more detail. It doesn't have to be exactly what you say in person, but you get to go in depth on the points that you're trying to make around the hearing. And I think that it's a very interesting aspect of all of this. And we'll link all of this in the show notes too, because you can read the written testimony and watch Sarah's verbal testimony and kind of, you can watch the whole hearing and see all the questions they asked. But there's a lot that goes into this, right? It's not just you show up, they ask you some questions, and you leave. There's so much behind the curtain that a lot of people don't see.
Absolutely. And as part of Landis Guides, a regional planning organization, we work in all kinds of community issues: aging, transportation, water, sewer infrastructure, workforce development. Broadband is just one, and I'm kind of the person. I did have the luxury of hiring a digital navigator this year who's been doubling essentially or more our capacity to work on broadband and digital inclusion, but I don't have someone here or a team here that would help me chunk out a written testimony like that. So right. I had staff members who picked up the slack on my other work, and I greatly appreciate that. They did just look at the writing for editing, but when it came to content, I needed to lean on the network I built. And you know, NDIA, Mosaic, NATO, our national organization, preps a lot of their people for going into testimony, and those kinds of experiences were invaluable at making it all come together.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to hear that Mosaic helped you in this regarding. I think you said this a couple minutes ago, but yeah, like we talked about what it would look like, but you don't understand or know just like the the amount of stress, the caliber of the situation until you're in it, right? Like, it's so much more intense. You can say it's a quick turnaround. You usually have less than a week, but it's a whole nother thing to be the person in the hot seat. And you did such a great job. So let's talk about the politics of your testimony. This is Congress that we're talking about, after all. So very political institution. Can you share anything about your political background? And then, like, the political background of this hearing in particular? It's a political process. So I'd love to hear about your experience and your thoughts on that overall. And we'll just start there.
Sure. So I'm in a rural conservative district in Western North Carolina. I was getting asked by the House minority. So we, broadband is a bipartisan issue. Broadband is a local priority at Land of Sky and regionally. So that was a good starting place. Didn't start political warfare internally between our organization and the fact that I was coming in asked by the House minority. The congressman's office was very supportive, offered to keep my bags during the hearing, which is, you know, also kind of one of those nuances you don't think about. You're traveling, you have physical luggage, and do you want that showing up on camera as, you know, maybe your bag sitting by the side of the table? Stuff like that is silly, but, you know, there's an image and a cleanliness, I guess, you want this to look like. They knew to offer that, which I think is interesting. We also, let's see, I had to disclose in my written testimony that these were not the views of our council. We're nonpartisan in nature. We work with everyone. Broadband supported, maybe the affordability program we haven't talked about as much at a regional level. And so I had to put a statement disclosing this is not the views of Land of Sky Regional Council. And at first, that was very scary to me because I thought it discredited my work, that I needed to be more than Sarah Nichols from Western North Carolina in order to validate what I was saying, because the other people on the panel were VP of telecom, you know, CEO kind of director level things. And I'm kind of, you know, a program manager, a planner at a, you know, a regional government. So I already looked different. That was scary. And then I embraced it, that for maybe one of the first times in my career, I was free of having to share the opinions of my organization, that this is just my professional, personal opinion. And I ran with that moment. I embraced it.
I was going to say, dare I say, expert opinion. And that's a point that we try to make all the time with Mosaic and with our project and the workshop that we run, is really that challenge that a lot of women face, where we lean a lot of times on our organization to give us the validity of being an expert. We say, I work at this place, like this place can vouch for me, you know, they, my expertise is validated by them. And men don't have to do that as often. I feel like it's much easier for men to be like, I am an expert in broadband and telecom. I'm currently the VP of, you know, this or that telecommunications agency or organization or association. But having Land of Sky kind of differentiate you from the organization in this moment, it makes sense. And I think I love to hear that it was empowering to you, because I think that is scary. Like, your initial reaction is exactly how I would have felt. I would have been like, but wait, then I'm just, you know, I'm just Sarah Nichols. But you are an expert. And I think that that's an important, I don't even know how to learn that lesson. I think you just learn it over time, but it is so difficult to stand on your own as an expert. But that's a huge part of the programming and that we have around building your brand, because it is so, it's crucial for women in our, in any industry, but women who want to go into policy and policy making, to have that, that expertise that they can lean on as an individual.
I agree. And I, so something else that was a learning experience about the politics is that the majority calls the hearing. And because I was coming in on the minority side, the minority staff were finding out when the public did about the hearing. They don't have to do that. Wow. It's just how this one played out. So I had the least amount of time of anyone on that panel to prepare. And thus that, you know, the committee staffers had the least amount of time to prepare the people coming in. So if you were coming in on the majority side, you'd have a little bit more time. It would still feel intense because it's very high value for very low prep time, even in a best case scenario. Coming in on the minority side is more challenging, I think.
I didn't even realize that the Democratic staff they had the same forewarning as everyone else. That's really interesting. So what Sarah's talking about here is the fact that right now the Republicans control the House of Representatives, the Democrats control the Senate, and because this was a U.S. House hearing, and it took place in the House of Representatives with a committee there, the Republicans were in control of the show. And so that's really interesting. That I know it's not always like that. There's no like cut and dry rule, but that's interesting for your particular hearing that they didn't have this advanced briefing and that all three of the other people testifying were invited. But you're saying they were all invited by the majority, aka the Republicans.
Yes. Yes. So they get three seats. The majority gets three seats on the panel and the minority gets one.
Wow. That's super interesting. And I will say, the Republicans, or I'll just say the majority, so in this case, the Republicans, they don't always choose someone from their own party. I know that there's no rules around that. They can pick someone who doesn't identify with the Republican Party to be their one of the experts testifying, which happens occasionally. But in this case, that's really fascinating because then they have extra prep time. They have more time to write their written testimony. They have more time to make accommodations, although I think all three were from the DMV area, or at least I know at least two of them were. So that also alleviates some of the stress, right? If you're already in the DC area, you just have to go to Capitol Hill. You don't have to get a hotel or have to get a flight or anything like that.
Which was very challenging, I might add, that because of how quickly I was making those travel arrangements, there wasn't a hotel anywhere, not more than we wanted to pay as an organization, but there just wasn't an option. I ended up, Mosaic actually helped me find something. It was a hostel.
Oh, no.
and so that was fun. You know, the night before you're testifying for Congress, you're staying in a hostel, a nice hostel, but a hostel.
But a hostel nonetheless.
Do not have the same flight options. There are direct flights from Asheville, right, to DC, but I couldn't get on them. So I went to Chicago on the way home. And so the time constraints that we were doing this hearing when Zelensky was in town and when the government was about to shut down. And so in DC, there was some exciting stuff going on that I think tied up some of the resources in making travel easy. And it also made it very expensive, which I think is worth highlighting in this moment, that I'm blessed to work at a place that saw this as a good opportunity and wants to be a part of real change. So we found the money. I'm thinking of other ladies who are in the Mosaic program with me, and they're executive directors of small nonprofits, maybe, and churning out thousands of dollars could be challenging to come up with.
And that could be a whole nother podcast episode in and of itself, because the fact that, and I don't know, I'm not a congressional staffer, I'm not sure in the rules why it was set up this way, but for, in here in America, to testify before Congress, you're invited, but you're not invited all expenses paid, right? So you are paying for your own hotel. If you have to travel, you're paying for your own travel accommodations. You don't get any sort of per diem or anything to cover your expenses to do this testimony, which creates, as you can imagine, like quite a few barriers to entry. So even if you are an expert, but you don't have the financial means or your organization isn't willing to pay for it, it puts a huge strain financially on the people testifying, which is not the case for the people who live in DC, right? Or who live in the area. They're not having to shell out for these expenses. So I don't know exactly the reasoning behind all of this, but I'm sure there are arguments for both sides, but I do think that it makes our hearings less diverse, less, I guess, representative of America as a whole, because it's just a huge financial burden.
I wonder how many entities or organizations decide not to participate because of funding. It's considered to be such an honor. And that I think people find money for it when the opportunity knocks. The constraints of getting it all done in time seem bigger.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But if you only have a few days to fly or come from wherever, I know that was something that when I was looking at it, I was like, geez, this is a lot of money to ask us to come up with that we weren't planning for.
Right. And exactly. You can't plan months in advance when the prices are a lot more affordable. These are like the last minute prices for everything.
Right.
Yeah. And then, like you said, the time it takes to get the testimony together and be prepared for this type of thing, that's definitely another constraint also, just having the luxury of being able to drop whatever you're working on and then pivot completely for this other massive project. So, I mean, there's still so much we could talk about. I find congressional hearings to be incredibly fascinating. They're part of our democratic process, and hopefully we can bring you on the podcast after you testify at your next hearing. But to close out the conversation, what advice do you have for women who are aspiring to testify before Congress or someday hope to be an expert witness like you are?
I think some of this is cliche, but maybe cliche for a reason. Like, do things that make you feel your best and get things off your plate. I had to get really good at delegating pretty quickly because there just wasn't room. And there are something that happens or happened as soon as we kind of announced I was doing this was everybody wanted to help. And that is great, but not everyone is in the right position to be helpful in certain ways. So figuring out how to use your network to do the things that are going to be helpful, I think, is a really critical part of it. I think I would emphasize for people that your testimony is your voice. And if you have people in your network you're working with that make you feel like it's not, you do not have the time to let that ego in the room. That you need to surround yourself by people who are lifting you up, making you feel empowered and powerful and confident. The folks that were putting a lot of doubt in my mind or making me afraid of Congress or, oh, they're going to come after you, I got rid of that negativity very fast and came into the hearing less nervous than I am about most things. People say it over and over again, how I didn't seem nervous. I wasn't by the time that day came. Days before, terrified. You know, I don't want to do this. This is so scary. And then a few days later, I'm like, let's do this. This is just people asking me questions about broadband like I do all the time. You hear a lot that you're the expert from people. And this is a moment where you need to feel that, you need to live it. But it's also true because members of Congress are not experts in the thing you are. So a lot of the questions I got asked in the hearing were less challenging than most of the things I get asked all of the time by people who are around this space. So all of that is practice on the way.
That's a great point. I mean, you are effectively there to teach Congress what you know about the issue and answer their questions. And they can't be experts on every single committee item that comes their way. They would that's impossible. So, I mean, that's a great perspective to have on it. And I am surprised to hear that people, you know, tried to, not necessarily maybe intentionally, but, you know, had this negative, like, oh, they're going to be out to get you. Like, that is certainly not helpful advice. But your advice is really great in general. And something I think about a lot is, like, when you're leaving a conversation with someone, how did that conversation make you feel? Is it worth the time to keep investing in that person for advice? You know, because it's so important to assess how you leave feeling a conversation with someone. And I think to your point, like those people who were like, they're going to be out to get you. It's going to be so hard. You should be so nervous or like anything negative. It's just like, that is not helpful advice. Yeah. And it's got to go. Like you said, leave that at the door because that's not helpful. That's such a good point. Are there any things that you wish you would have known beforehand or done differently, or any final thoughts in general that you'd like to discuss on your hearing?
I have a couple. In preparation, I watch local government all of the time. I watch state government regularly. Federal government is not something I pay as close attention to. And because of that, I wasn't necessarily aware of the bills that those committee members might be asking about or talking about. If I had had more time or do this again, I would do a lot more research on who's on that committee and what is it that they're, why are they there? What's their interest in this community or these issues? Some folks prepped me mildly in that way. I feel like that would have been really helpful. The other thing that I think would have been very helpful is having more practice. Because I was on the minority, the majority gets to pick the order that people speak.
Okay.
The majority didn't ask me very many questions. In fact, I only got asked one from the majority congressman. But a lot of times I was last at anything. Mm-hmm. Because of, I was the last on the panel to speak. I was often the last to get asked something. And because of that, you have a unique position to counterpoint, emphasize things you agree on. And about halfway through the questioning was when I got much better at just taking notes about what was getting asked and what had already been said, so that you can say as many points as you want to or emphasize as much throughout the process. So I wish I had been a little quicker on the pickup for how you could have done that. Because if you were really good at improvising, you could have done that even in your verbal testimony. I practiced out loud. I practiced in front of people. I made sure that the language could roll off of my tongue easily, and that was helpful for me. What I didn't do that a lot of people recommended was watch a lot of hearings. Mm. The committee staff sent me a few that they thought would be helpful, and I thought if I watch those, I might get in my own head about this. So I did watch a number of testimonies. And that helped me look at pacing, look at points, how they looked, what things you notice or don't notice about that experience. That was helpful. If you're someone else, maybe watching a lot more hearings would be helpful. I chose thoughtfully not to do that. What I do want to talk about that I think is interesting is after. Mm-hmm. I was very naive to a lot of this. And I thought once Thursday is over, I go back to my normal life, you know, Sarah Nichols planning in Western North Carolina. That was a farce. There's locally, there was good press about the hearing. It did elevate my credibility on this issue locally. So some places that I had struggled with the conversation, all of a sudden, now they really want to hear my perspective and move forward.
You're getting all these meeting requests now.
Yes. My calendar is very full. There has been lots of media.
Yep.
Well, by my standards, lots of media about the hearing, I'm getting quoted. So the story continues to go on. I heard from several people that this was a job thing, that you get offered lots of jobs, or people do this to escalate their career somehow. And I'm realizing that that could be true too.
Yeah.
That I thought no one watches C-SPAN, you know?
Yeah. Right.
So who would catch this? And in reality, knowing, I think even non-broadband related, just knowing that you can stand that kind of pressure.
Yeah.
And make that moment happen has impressed a lot of folks. So if you wanted to use this to elevate your career somehow, I think it's totally probable. One of the things I would have done too is have thought of things I would have said in my testimony that could become hashtags later.
Oh yeah. Yeah, kind of the messaging and strategy around that comms, the communications of all of the of your message, of your purpose,
right,
points.
I thought it was over on Thursday. Now that I see that it's not, ACP just came back up with a memo from the White House to continue funding.
Yeah.
You know, thinking about this as a longer game and how to help move this initiative forward, like that, I didn't have time to think about it then.
Sure. And with it being your first time, how else would you know?
Right. How would I have known? And not being around a lot of folks who've done it before.
Right.
Necessarily, that was lost on me. If I were to do it again, I would make that a priority on the front end, is like, what after the hearing is the right way to roll out your moment?
That's really great advice. I mean, that's excellent advice to be thinking about for anyone, not just people who are in the position to be asked to testify before Congress, but in general. I think that that's really helpful insight. And just one thing I thought about while you were talking is, you said that you were involved in a lot of state and local hearings, and you watch those and you stay up to date and on the state and local aspects. One point is that it depends state by state, but almost anyone can testify in those state and local settings. It's not the whole pomp and circumstance of the federal level testimony. You get a lot less time. You can still submit written oftentimes, but that's also a great place to get started and kind of cut your teeth on all of this political processes, because it's a low stakes way compared to being on C-SPAN. They're not always televised. Sometimes they are or recorded, but that's one way you can practice, and you can pinpoint issues and hearings that really matter to you, craft your testimony and tell it to your state legislators or your city council or your county council. It depends on your local government, how it's kind of set up, but that's a great way to get started, I think. And something that I wish that could be a whole nother episode too, is just like how to get involved on the state and local level, because it could function as a stair step in a lot of ways. But this was just such a fascinating episode. Congratulations again on your testimony. Like I said, I'll link it in the show notes for anyone who's interested in watching you or reading your testimony. Thank you so much, Sarah, for speaking on this episode of The Mosaic Moment.
Thank you, Jasmine.
Thanks for listening. Want to learn more about the Progressive Policy Institute? Follow us on Twitter at PPI and on Facebook at Progressive Policy Institute, or go to our website at progressivepolicy.org. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen and check back for new episodes. We'll talk with you soon.